85,000 jobs, over $82 billion. That's what the resources industry is worth to Queensland. But what's coming up on the horizon for the industry? Of course, net zero emissions by 2050 is the talk of the nation, talk of the world, in fact, over coming days and weeks with this big conference happening over in Glasgow. A man eminently qualified to talk about how the resources industry will be impacted, what they're currently doing, what does that future look like. Of course, it's Ian McFarlane. Ian is the Chief Executive of the Queensland Resources Council and a very highly respected former Federal Cabinet Minister. Ian, welcome to the King Review, first of all.
It's great to be with you, Gavin.
You must be watching from the sidelines now, having seen it at the coalface, excuse the pun, there in Canberra for many, many years. You would have seen this process unfold over recent weeks, the Nationals, the Libs. I mean, what's your take on what's unfolded there in Canberra? Have they made the right decision?
Well, I think they've made the right decision, and the decision was inevitable. So the real question has always been that if we set a target, and Australia has set a target, how do we get there? And I have to congratulate the Prime Minister and all of those who've worked this issue through in not just rushing in, grabbing a target, clapping their hands together and saying that's done. Mm. There is an enormous amount still to be done, but by taking this on a piece-by-piece approach, by making sure each step was a sure step, Australia is well-placed to reach net zero by 2050. And to do it in a way which has the least effect on both the economy and particularly regional Australia. So there is a lot to do. It will rely very heavily on technology. It will rely very heavily on people being prepared to change, which is very much a part of success in life. Mm. But there is a lot of work still to go, and the challenge will be to make sure that regional people don't bear the brunt. In fact, don't carry the load by themselves. This is something that needs to involve every Australian and involve every Australian regardless of where they live. And if it comes at a cost, it needs to come at a cost to all Australians. Mm.
Well, let's just unpack that issue of regional Australia and, of course, regional Queensland. Cities all over our state, of course, rely so heavily on those jobs. As I mentioned, 85,000 jobs across the sector in Queensland alone. So let's unpack that, Ian. The person who works not just in the mines, but I think about all of the side industries, all the feeder industries that service the mining industry right across this state. I mean, how do we transition those people, even the ones who don't work in the mines, how do we transition that broader, those broader jobs?
Well, if you're talking about the broader resources sector in Queensland has a very strong future. Mm. Firstly, because of the new opportunities that will come from the rare earths and the base metals like copper and et cetera. Mm. We all know that as you move more and more into renewable energy and electric cars, you need more and more things like zinc and copper. Mm. You need new metals, vanadium and the like, and cobalt. But you'll need a big slab of what we're already producing. So that's the first part of it. Secondly, there will be a significant hydrogen industry develop in Queensland. Okay. And we have the technology, particularly in terms of transporting LNG, liquefied natural gas. Likely that hydrogen, when it's exported, will be in a liquefied form. So we're a step ahead of other countries in terms of that. Mm. So that in terms of the broader sector and the industries that supply that broader sector, there will be changes, but it will be to do more of what they're doing now. So mm. supplying technology, supplying parts, supplying services, supplying people to service that industry. Mm. In terms of specific industries that may change, so there will be, as I just said, the metals industry, for instance, will expand. Mm. In terms of the coal industry, those changes aren't coming anytime soon.
Okay, well, that was my next question. In the coal industry, you're a 25-year-old coal miner at the moment in Queensland. What does your career look like going forward?
Well, if you're in coking coal, and predominantly Queensland is coking coal, it's 70% of our production. Mm. If you're in coking coal, then the future looks pretty good. I mean, 2, 3, maybe even more decades of producing coking coal, because without coking coal, you can't produce steel. Now, I acknowledge that there is work being done to produce steel from hydrogen, but as you mentioned, I've been a minister and I funded projects to produce steel with less emissions. And I have to say that that field is strewn with failure and expense. So, yes, we may get to a stage where hydrogen replaces coking coal, but it is literally decades away in terms of being a one-for-one competitor. In terms of the demand for thermal coal, so turning to the other 30%, and looking at Asia, they are still building coal-fired power stations, and whatever decisions Australia makes about burning coal or burning fossil fuels, other countries will make their own decisions. The fact that we produce thermal coal in Australia that is of the highest quality, lowest residue, virtually no sulphur, that produces more kilowatts of electricity per tonne of coal than, say, coal from Indonesia or the like. Our coal has the lowest environmental impact when it's burned to produce electricity. When you then put that to the fact that it's mined under the strictest environmental conditions and the strictest land rehabilitation conditions in the world, and they're not my words, they're Jackie Trad's words when she was Deputy Premier.
There's a blast from the past.
Yeah, that is a bit of a blast from the past. But in perspective, if there are countries in the world that still demand coal, and every prediction is that there will be, then they should be using Queensland coal. So those thermal coal jobs, the minority of the coal sector, but those thermal coal jobs are looking at growth in thermal demand over the next decade and then an adjustment. But no one really knows how long that adjustment is going to take. So I think the other thing that shouldn't be forgotten is that people who work in the resources industry are going to become more and more skilled. They're going to become more and more technology savvy. There's going to be automation. There's going to be all sorts of kit that we've never even imagined. And the resource industry is an industry that historically has been a fast mover in technology adaption and adoption, and we lead the world in terms of mining technology. So those people are going to be highly skilled, so they may still work in the resources sector or they may transition into another sector, but they will have skills that are in demand. And if you look at the situation now, the biggest problem facing the resources sector is a skill shortage. So that really says to me, if I'm 25 working in the coal sector, I've got a lot in front of me in that sector in a very highly paid job, with 70% of the jobs in the resource sector paying more than $100,000 a year.
Well, let's again talk about jobs. There's a lot of, I guess, figures thrown about that in the renewable energy sector there'll be hundreds of thousands of jobs, and yet there is a lot of scepticism about there may be some construction jobs, you know, let's say a solar farm or a wind farm, for example. There may be some of those initial construction jobs. But, I mean, in your research, your expertise, are there those the level of ongoing jobs on these renewable projects that mining, the traditional mining, can deliver?
Well, I think that's a very good point, Gavin. And certainly if we take the last 10 years as an example, the jobs have been in construction. That said, some of these solar farms will have a very big maintenance schedule put on them in 20 years. A solar panel only lasts about 20 years and has to be replaced. There'll be all sorts of wear and tear, but realistically, the jobs are in the construction sector. But that as an employment sector of the resources sector is only a very small part. The jobs are in the mining sector, actually going and digging the stuff out. We need to do more refining. We need to do more smelting. We need to do the downstream processing, particularly in the new metals, in the rare earths that are going to be in demand for magnets and strategic, in a defence term. Those are the areas where there will be more jobs. So there will be people who move around in the sector, and they may move from one part of the sector to another. But there will be jobs. But in the renewable sector, they are, as you say, predominantly construction jobs.
Well, let's finish then on the bright future in some of that rare earth category, some of those minerals that we need for things like microchips, like electric vehicles. Just talk to us a little bit, Ian McFarlane, about the positive future there for Queensland in that sector.
Well, if you look at Queensland's copper production and the amount of copper that's needed for an electric vehicle. An electric vehicle consumes four times as much copper as a conventional vehicle. So immediately you see huge demand coming on for copper. Then you've got things like nickel and vanadium and cobalt and lithium, all the rare earths that come after that, which, as I say, you need to make magnets for electric motors and for turbine generators.
Smartphones, the whole lot.
Yep, the whole thing. Everything we take for granted comes out of the earth, particularly in northwestern Queensland in terms of rare earth. So the potential is there. As I say, the challenge for us will be to try and process as much of that here in Australia as we can. We're seeing proposals, for instance, for battery factory in Townsville in North Queensland. Those are the sorts of opportunities we need to pursue, because Queensland will remain very dependent on its resources sector, and the resources sector will continue to prosper. So we've just got to approach this in a pragmatic, practical way and ensure that we open every opportunity and not rush past opportunities in some sort of political war game. We need to make sure that we are taking precise steps to not only ensure the economy is protected, but in fact grown.
And a final message from you, Ian McFarlane, to political parties of all stripes in this seeming rush to net zero by 2050, just a message that you'd like to see them take on board to ensure that those jobs and this important sector does remain viable long into the future.
Well, put down your weapons. The weaponisation of climate change as a political weapon has taken us backwards, not forwards, and has cost us opportunities that we cannot afford to miss again. So let's just all agree that we've got the target, we're going to work towards it. If you want to play politics, go and play politics in another area. If we all, both sides, look at this as an opportunity, not a political opportunity, but an opportunity for the economy to grow, then we can make the most of it. But if political parties decide to play politics and gamesmanship over this, the losers will be Queenslanders and Australians. So put down your weapons, stop the last 20 years of climate wars, get on with the opportunity and focus on making sure that Australia achieves its target.
Absolutely brilliant. Love it. Ian McFarlane, Chief Executive of the Queensland Resources Council, thanks for your time today.
Always a pleasure, Gavin.